Good morning and welcome to the Preventing Grace podcast for September 14th, 2020, the year that never stopped. How are you today? Are you excited to be here podcasting?
Be here as if we're in, like we just literally woke up and now we're lying in bed.
Well, I feel like I've been awake for the whole night because that's now what I do. So, but did you have anything? We have some stuff to talk about today. I shouldn't pretend like we don't. We have three whole things because we did some planning ahead of time. Which one would you like to
first? We thought out. I think we spent a good laborious 20 minutes.
Yeah, kind of.
Just surfing the internet to find something about
it. Yes, we... It's getting really bad. I mean, it's partly because I don't really want to talk about the stuff that should be talked about. Like, I'm not going to talk about the election because I don't care. And I don't want to talk about, you know, my own to-do list because that's also terrible.
I mean, that's really what you're thinking about most of the
time. That's what I'm thinking about most of the time. So trying to get out of whatever to think about something else. So every day I surf the Arts and Letters Daily looking for anything that's not really political or not really, not about the wildfire. I don't want to read about the wildfires. Just seeing a picture makes my stomach turn over. I don't want to know. I don't want to know what John MacArthur's doing. I'm not excited to know. I haven't read a thing about that. It's very stressful. Being on the internet is very stressful. So I had done Pelican links for a couple of years, put the links together for the Pelicans, but I made every effort to quit and finally did not because surfing the internet has just become mentally unstabilizing for me. So now somebody else
like
is doing it.
You're creating your own little safe space here.
Yes, I am.
You're cushioning yourself from out of reality.
Yes.
Although I guess that's kind of what people just did historically because they didn't have
video. Yeah, I mean, how...
And unless they got a newspaper and the old log cabin.
Yes.
They only heard news like once a week when they went to church or when they went to...
And even then, like the news on the boat, I just read the Rip Van Winkle story, or I read some of them, which is really creepy. They were totally creeped out by it. And they read like...
What, the kids?
3 months old... No, the little ones hadn't really... You get your 3-month-old newspaper and you discuss that news for 3 months until you got a new 3-month-old newspaper. And so when he slept for 20, or whatever it was he was doing for 20 years, it wasn't really that big of a deal. Like, yeah, they changed government and it was actually better when he came back. So I kind of feel like that's what I want to do right now is be Rip Van Winkle until 2040.
Things should be better by then.
Maybe they will.
Well, the revolution will then.
Yeah, the revolution will be. Yeah, we'll have gotten past that and I'll have just slept in the Catskill Mountains for a long time. It's close by. I could totally do that, actually. Just go live in a cabin.
Yeah, no, I mean, there was a while back. I think it was in Time Magazine or something, but there was a Russian family.
My parents are shouting at each other.
There was a Russian family that went off into the mountains and lived there for almost the entire reign of the Soviet.
Really?
And they came back and there was...
And they were like, what? That's fantastic. I mean, it's not good to know about everything.
Yeah.
Like, it is just, it's not good to know.
Yeah.
And in a year when, like, a lot of things are actually happening, it's not really helpful to know about big griefs, like, you know, all of Oregon and California just burning to the ground, but also like small things. They're not really small, but you know,
smaller
as you go through your Facebook feed and find out that terrible things are happening to people, you know, day by day, it's not making me, like a healthier, more functional person. So I must say, taking off the links and has really helped for the last 6 weeks. I know somebody else is doing it because I'm just not reading anyone's opinions or news about anything except cuties, which is one of our topics. I've read that, and what was the other thing? Somebody asked a good question. So which should we do first? Also, we had a funeral.
We should talk about the funeral first. Okay.
That's a good thing to talk about.
Move in to that. And not really for the funeral, but this woman, Mary Lindsay, who died at the age of 103.
Yeah.
Who joined Good Shepherd in 1936. I think she was 19 years old. A nursing student. And she stayed at Good Shepherd for her entire life.
Yeah. Which, okay, why I thought this was exceptional yesterday on my blog was because there are like 8 Episcopal churches within 15 miles of each other.
Yeah.
Like our town is stuffed to the brim with Episcopal church options. And a lot of people, as one would, sort of went from one church to another.
Doing the circuit.
And then if they didn't like that, they would go be Methodist for a while.
No, and like at one church, we get a new pastor, and so they would go to that church
for a while.
Please get tired of their pastor. And it wasn't like the modern version of the church hopping, but it was a little bit.
It was like proto.
Before. So there was an Episcopal church circuit you went on when they didn't like something happened in one parish, you go to another one.
Yeah. And I'm sure that stuff like that happened in the sort of, because there's also a lot of Baptist churches around here, and you just don't have to. You don't have to go to one church for years and years and years. You just don't have to do that. And also, it's a small town, so everybody knows each other anyway. Say you're going to be like, oh, I'm going to go over to Christchurch for a while. And you already know everybody over there, so it's totes fine. And it's a great way to avoid, like if you're trying to avoid the internet, to avoid conflict. Moving from one church to another is a great way to do that.
You just get mad and you want to go somewhere else. You just do it. Right.
Yeah.
So,
or you know,
what does it take for a person?
Right. So Mary didn't do that. She came to Good Shepherd in 1936 and did not ever leave.
And as her pastor, I can tell you for the last 18 years, I can tell you that it wasn't because she was totally happy with everything all the time. I mean, she got angry with me, or not angry, but she displeased with me sometimes. She was, she's a normal human being.
Yeah, not like especially godly. I mean, she wasn't godly. I'm just right, but she wasn't like
a nun, holy, but right? Like, someone you'd say this is a uniquely godly woman,
right? Like the mother of Jesus.
Right.
She was
a normal person.
She was a very normal person, except for this. living forever.
So how does somebody, think of how many bad sermons she heard over the years. Think of how many ridiculous situations she had to put up with in this one church. How many bad decisions by the vestry. How many times the church almost is broke. How many bad church programs she attended. How many ridiculous things she...
Sunday school curriculum she went through.
Right.
It was like
garbage. All the while there's another option for her. She's.
Yeah, she could go to literally anywhere else, but she never, ever, ever did.
And she stayed. So, I mean, now compare that mindset to the modern one, which is, I'll stay here for a while, maybe. And then someone makes you angry. The church does something they don't want it to do. And I'm not talking about false teaching. I'm just talking about, the church isn't what all you expected it to be. And so, there you go. You go somewhere else.
For a bit. You go to that other place thinking, I'm not necessarily going to stick there either. I'm doing this for a while. Like, you just don't have an idea of permanence in your mind. It's just not a category that you have.
So it's like a sighting of a dinosaur, because they don't exist anymore. People of this caliber, or not, I won't say that they don't, but we have people like that in our church right now, I think. But
well, we kind of are turning into this.
Yeah, we're still.
We should have left a long time ago. And
no.
People look at me and are like, are you still there? Well, they haven't made me leave yet. It might happen, but
I love the idea of going to it as a pastor. I love the idea of going to it. I didn't at first, but I love the idea of going to a church and staying there until you retire. Because.
But although I would just say you should retire.
What? Yeah, there comes a point at which one should retire.
One perhaps should retire at that the end mean of stop one's working, ministry.
But there is a time when you begin to slip a little bit and
maybe.
You need to have a plan lined up for your succession, normally in an Anglican setting that's not too difficult because we have bishops and
people don't really die in the pulpit.
Yeah,
in our world.
But I don't want to. You know, I think it's nice to do that, to not die in the pulpit, but to go as long as you can in one parish because you get an opportunity that way. To really put down a foundation in a way that you don't if you're there for 7 years or 3 years or whatever.
I think yours too. My pastor, in Oregon, was at that church for 30 years, I think. Mm. And I do think that there were probably a lot of tumultuous battles, maybe not really tumultuous, but there was more conflict when he was younger. That once you get to a certain age,
is that French, certain age?
A certain age. It's exactly the same as in English.
Really?
Yeah, a certain age. But you know what I mean. Like,
I thought you were just saying certain age with a French accent, but it's really...
No, that's really what you say. That people... Okay, because I thought, you know, the sort of model of churchness... is you need to have a pastor the same age as the demographic you're looking for. So if you want young families, you need to have a young pastor and keep getting a young pastor. And if you want, you know, middle age, I don't know, your pastor needs to be the same age as everyone, which is awkward, but because he will age. So that's too bad. But I think having somebody who sticks around and gets older, at least I saw this with my own pastor, is there's a settledness, not in a bad way, you don't want to be too settled, but like everybody begins to relax because you've had all the fights and you know what to expect and the parameters of the, you know, thing are clear. You know, he's been tested by everyone and he won basically.
Yeah, well there's almost a security and safety with the pastor's been there for a long time. Mm-hmm. He's
he's not gonna like show up in sequins one Sunday accidentally except that did happen here, but he hadn't been at that church for a long time.
And it's the Episcopal church, so you don't know. Talking about a normal healthy church. So, but anyway, we switched to talking. So if you have a church where people are committed to each other, I mean, it's a little bit like a marriage in some ways. That you have to overcome the things you don't like about other people so that you can be good to them, and not run away when things go bad. And that's part of I think that's what God does. I think one of the reasons why churches are unhealthy is the same reason why my marriage is. Become unhealthy is if you decide you're not going to engage. If you decide you decide that when this person makes me angry, I'm going to leave the marriage, but I'm going to shut myself off and not engage with her or him anymore. Then your marriage is going to be torturous, and you're not going to grow because God made you. God put you together with another person so that you can be your rough edges can be knocked off. You can be sanctified. You can die to yourself.
Yeah.
Same thing in a church. You have to die to yourself to stay that long.
You have to
die. So every day, every week, every Sunday, you have to die a little to stay in a church for 84 years. And she did. We said she wasn't like she's a normal person, but that's a very godly thing.
Yeah. I mean, just she might not have expected to live that long, for instance, but.
So what happens like now is instead of staying in one place and being rocked and being pierced and being insulted and being all the things that Jesus was, you short circuit the process by jumping out and going somewhere else. And then you go and you stay there until one little slight thing is too much for you. And so you jump somewhere else. And so what you're creating in your soul is like a little tender, precious.
Well, fragility.
Yeah, fragility. Right. You're not able to withstand anything. If you can't withstand conflict or things you don't like within the body of Christ.
Because it's not like, okay, if you added them all up over a lifetime, they would be huge. But they don't come at you, you know, as an avalanche.
No.
It's what you do with them. You know, if somebody, I mean, because it's not that, it's just like anything. There's really good things about it and lovely things. And then there's some like deep annoyances. And those, what you do with those deep annoyances begin to have more and more weight. So if you get over them, if you forgive the other person all the time, it's always many different people, you can, they have less and less weight with you. You yourself become more solid. Yeah. and good, healthy.
Right.
But if you turn them over in your mind and you begin to keep track of them and count them, you eventually aren't going to be able to stomach it.
How many people did Mary have to forgive over 84 years?
I don't know, like 5 a month for 80.
Because she wasn't, she was never a bitter person.
Mm.
There were some things, yes. So she, like I said in the sermon for her funeral, that there were, you know, she never really quite grasped why we had to leave the Episcopal Church and why we had to, I mean, she was in her 90s at the time. why we had to go from that church to our old church building to the new one. And, you know, which was really hard for her because she was in that old building for most of her life.
Yeah.
And she had devoted herself to taking care of the things in that building for most of her life.
Yeah.
And so that was really hard for her to understand. Theological stuff, she had a really hard time grasping what exactly was at stake. And, you know, it's fine. But she came. She went with us.
Yeah, she came with us, like her loyalty. And then she wrote a letter to the
editor against the Episcopal Church taking our building, which was really, you know, it was a pretty good letter too.
It was an excellent letter. Yeah. And she hosted a mission group for years. Remember that?
That's right, she did.
She was a mission group.
And she didn't quite understand why we're doing that either.
I know. She's like, why are we meeting at homes now? Because, you know, she lived through big cultural shifts. Like the ACE, she was in charge of the ACW, the Anglican Church of Women, which was the center of the church, really.
For years.
And as women worked more, younger women came in who weren't really Anglican, didn't understand what it was that organization just didn't pivot, like people didn't understand what it was for. They wanted to, I don't know, they just didn't want to organize themselves that way.
Right.
And so Mary lived through the end of the Anglican Church Women graciously, like, and there are still,
she's not really happy about it, but she wasn't
like, well,
I'm out of here.
I've had this for 100 years. I'm done here. Right. No, I mean, it was really interesting. Like, and the harvest dinner, she lived through the end of the harvest dinner. Good Shepherd did a harvest dinner for 100 years. And then a new generation of people who didn't understand the harvest dinner
and didn't have time for
the harvest dinner said, we want to do something else. And, you know, that would have been another case where you could have been like, well, I devoted my life to this. And you young whippersnappers don't know anything. I'm out of here. But she did not do that either.
Yeah.
It's just really, she let a new generation of Christians come in, basically, which I don't know if I would have the fortitude to do that because I'm territorial and difficult. Some people have a difficult time with me.
Yeah, they do.
And I have a place at Good Shepherd that's not unsimilar to Mary's in that I have my finger in every pie and for some things you have to get past me, even though I don't mean to be in the way. So I need to be more like Mary. Her funeral was so moving. The other thing that I was really interested in is that I think people are in this culture, when you're really old and you're in a nursing home, people are like, it'll be so great when you finally meet your maker or whatever. You'll be at release from your suffering, blah, blah, blah. No one felt that way. You know, 103 years was not enough time with Mary. And it wasn't a, you know, a celebration of life. It was real heartfelt grief at her funeral, which I also really appreciated. No one was like, well, thank goodness she's in a better place. Well, I mean, she is in a better place now,
She's very, very, incredibly happy right now, but
that's literally not
the point. It's like when a mountain falls down or when a big redwood tree is burnt
a crisp.
Right.
You're not like, oh, well, thank goodness that's out of the way now. It's devastating. So if you're in a church where they're trying to get rid of the old people, make them go out then you might want to rethink that, because
I was thinking the other day about that PDX church and should I have not named it?
No, don't name it.
Oh well.
And, too late.
In Portland, that told its old people to come to the early service and then after the service to go out the back door, because they're trying to attract young people and young people don't want to be around old people.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just the most, okay, just setting aside the fact that it's sinful and wicked, which it is, who are you serving?
Yeah,
are you serving Christ? Are you serving, you're trying to build the organization? Secondly, why on earth would you take the most stable, faithful people who know the Bible and love it and love Jesus
and have cash,
right, and chuck them over for 20-somethings maybe some of them are fine, if they're the sort of 20-something who wouldn't come to church if there were old people there, they're not fine. You don't want them there.
You don't want their money, and they don't have it anyway. And you need to go to church for your whole lifetime in order to show yourself approved.
Right.
He who began a good work and you will be faithful to complete it when you've attended church faithfully for 103 years.
Well, as part of it, I mean, that's, especially if it's one church, it's really,
So anyway, I'm really sad. I haven't been able to stop crying, which surprised me too. Cause I think it's just too much for the year of COVID. Maybe if she had died next year or last year, I would, but it's like one too many things.
Well, see, it was she and Joyce Coppola, who's another woman who's just like that. This redwood tree. And then Kay, who was with us every morning, every from Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday morning. Mm-hmm. I had morning prayer and they would be there. Some other people might come in.
Yeah, people came in.
But those three were there every morning. And it was great. So I got to ask, so like instead of, you know, I didn't prepare a sermon every day, but we would read after the readings, I would ask, so what are your questions about
readings? And they brought up everything.
It was always a good discussion. They always wanted to talk about the Bible. Those three ladies also were like instrument. I've mentioned before how God changed Good Shepherd from what it was to what it is now, and the starting the Bible studies was instrumental in that, because these were not like getting a programmed Bible study. We sat down, we opened the Bible up, we went first by first through a book, books at a time, and that started with the Tuesday morning Bible study, and these three ladies were the Tuesday morning Bible study. Mm-hmm. and from there it grew up.
Yeah, and because, I mean, the Episcopal Church for 100 years wasn't a bastion of good teaching for 100 years or more, even though there was the possibility of good teaching. It hadn't been. I think that all three of them had ideas and thoughts about God that were, you know, I would say pretty dubious. But again, you don't grow a redwood forest in one day. It takes years and years and years in a place to have the word of God sink down into mm-hmm. people. I think that's another reason why it's an interesting contrast to have protesting and, you know, people like, we've had enough, we've had enough. Young people saying, we've had enough, we've had enough. And then on the other hand, to have the, you know, to contemplate the life and work of these women who lived through all those decades, a whole century of stuff. They've seen, they saw it all. And they never said, we've had enough. They kept showing up. And I think by the end, they had really good theology at their back, mm-hmm. and knowledge of scripture. They grew in a decade in the knowledge of Christ through the Bible reading and the life of the church to go together really well, which is another reason I'm going to say one every week. Don't say the gospel's not enough unless you're doing daily morning prayer with your whole congregation. You don't have any business saying the gospel's not enough, because again, you didn't try it. You didn't try the gospel. You didn't try the Bible. You didn't try Christianity as a way to solve all our intractable problems.
People everyone who say the gospel's not enough never really believed it was in the first place. Yeah. It wasn't like they tried. So what we mean by the gospel being enough is that because God uses the gospel to change hearts of stone to hearts of flesh and convert the soul, then any program for societal change is always going to just be surface. Even if it changes things, which even the good ones, they're only going to manage to change
the surface. You don't actually go down into the roots of the person.
You can have laws against racial injustice, which you should, actual racial injustice, which you should. But no one's going to change them. No one's going to stop being a racist because you pass a law.
Right. Or because they read White Fragility.
Right.
They have to encounter a God who isn't racist and have to deal with the scripture over and over again.
They have to be given mercy for their wickedness, which they're condemned to hell, and recognize, oh, wait, maybe my white skin doesn't make me, or my black skin, whatever it might be, doesn't make me better than the other person over here.
So I'm going to...
because I deserve hell. But God gave me Jesus. So, wow.
So this is a good segue. Shall I read this comment that I got? Because a while ago, I reviewed Breathe a Bridge by Latasha Morrison for Christianity Today. I guess I did it last year. A year ago, last year. So somebody asks, which is a very good question, I'm wondering how you feel about your endorsement of Latasha Morrison's book, Be the Bridge. I didn't endorse it, really. I wasn't asking her to deserve a review. If you've taken some time to look into how she operates, facilitates the groups, and what she says about communal and ancestral guilt and white fragility, what she tweets, I read your review from Christianity Today and wonder if you still stand by it. Are there any other books on race that you do recommend? So I should say that I have carefully not paid attention to what Latasha Morrison is saying and doing. I have carefully not followed her on Twitter. I can guess how that might have been. I fought really hard on that review to be comfortable with the language for how the gospel was talked about, because she did in the book articulate the gospel, the cross. And so I said, this is very good that she did that. But I kind of had a sense of where she was heading.
Right.
So I think her book as it stands isn't bad at all. You could still read it, but I don't know that I would.
And it was well written.
It was well written. It was really interesting.
So the thing, if someone can, if someone believes and articulates the gospel well, but they're wrong about how to fix society, there's at least a starting point for conversation and engagement.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's interesting to, I would say, yeah, people do need to talk to each other. So Be the Bridge is, she has groups of people, I think they're carefully chosen, get together and they talk about systemic racism and racism in the past, their own racist past. And they try to all get on the same page. At least that's what it said in the book. And I thought that's actually a good thing. you know, if your granddaddy was racist, mm-hmm. and you have that jangling around in the back of your head and you've never dealt with it, it might be really good to talk about that with some people who, you know, in a group, in a Christian group. That's not at all bad at all. Or any of this bad stuff that happened in your past. It's really good to get that out into the light. And I do think people act in generational ways. You know, if your dad was an alcoholic, you really need to talk about that.
Yeah.
Because that's going to affect how you live and
right.
how you are. You don't need to repent of your dad's alcoholism. Go ahead and repent for your own bitterness and rage. But you should look at it. And
so I think that book, I remember you reading it. I think there's a fundamental difference between that book and something like reading D'Angelo's White Fragility or Kindy or something like that, because those books, I get so tense reading them, because I they're just such lies. The D'Angelo book is grounded in a paradigm that's just utterly contrary to the gospel. And so I'm reading it, and I'm knowing that other Christians are reading it and think it's good. And the reason they think it's good is because, you know, D'Angelo's not a Christian, but she, you know, because I think the Christian person wants to be just.
Yeah.
And wants to be fair.
Yeah.
And is also very sensitive to sin.
Right.
And knows
that sin goes more than just into the action. It goes all the way into the heart.
Critical race theory misnames what sin is and brings guilt to the soul, tries to anyway, that is false. And yet I don't know a Christian who doesn't accept, because we're trying to be anyway sensitive to the conviction of the Holy Spirit, who doesn't let guilt for things they shouldn't feel guilty for shape their relationship to God and to yeah. everyone else. And that's what this does. It lowers a false guilt onto somebody, onto people, and yeah. also gives, I mean, that's the more compassionate way of looking at something, why someone might look at D'Angelo and think, oh, I've got to read this and follow it. The other side of it is that it also gives you a really, really good, fast, quick avenue for hypocrisy. You get to, you know, if you've read D'Angelo, now you've been given, you've been equipped with language to use where, so that people can admire you.
Yeah.
You
become virtuous in your guilt.
Right. There's really no difference between using the language of critical race theory in the public sphere on social media and going to Bob Jones University and keeping your sideburns cut to the right length.
Yeah.
Because it's all an outward sign of righteousness that you know if you're in that circle who is good and who is evil by who uses that language and who doesn't.
Yeah. It's all signaled, all surface, all wicked, all hearsay. Yeah. I mean, it's really tragic, because I do think that people are really wicked, and the heart is intolerably wicked.
Yeah.
Who can even bear it? But this lets everybody out. You know, if you went and like went downtown and were with the Black Lives Matter thing on Friday,
you were necessarily righteous.
Yeah, you just did a great thing, and you're good to go. Like, you can go home now and do whatever you want, because you've been holy and good.
Right.
And I think, yeah, it's really tragic. And no, I don't, in the interest of not canceling people, I don't want to go and look at what LaTosha Morrison is saying right now, because I'm pretty sure I can guess what it is. I bet she's retweeting lots of people who I would never want to have right. anyone follow after. And I bet that you don't need to be the bridge group with her organization. I bet that you could, again, try starting a morning prayer service right. at your church and have people show up to that every day, every single day, and engage with the Bible. And all that stuff is going to come up. You just wait. You'll have the hard conversations, and you will have to repent of the sins that you've actually done, and that'll be painful and miserable for you. So you won't enjoy it, but you should do it anyway.
But regarding this book, I mean, you know, it's a little bit like I can go back 10 years ago and read something by someone now who's full on critical race theory, but see good things in their past work.
Yeah.
Right. So I don't want to name names, but there are people in the Reformed world who, you know, 10 years ago they were writing good things, they were preaching good things, they were fine, and then they this thing took hold like a plague bacillus, and
you can still read Harry Potter. In other words, just because J.K. Rowling is wrong
about gayness,
about transgenderism.
Well, no, she's right about transgenderism. Are you being
sarcastic? That's why I'm being sarcastic. Oh, okay. Then you can still read Harry Potter. You don't have to cancel her. Like, yeah. It's okay. I know it's so confusing. It's so hard. So, okay. So what did you want to, what are you looking at? Do you want to talk about the horrible cuties?
Yeah.
Or not?
I think we should, just because.
What would we say about it? Don't watch
well,
it.
Well, the one thing that I think deserves comment is the weird. Okay, so I saw this article titled "The Creepy Right-Wing Criticism of,
mm-hmm.
of Wait." So we're creepy for wait. First of all, it's right-wing now.
I know
to oppose blatant pedophilia.
Yeah.
And then I mean, you know, we for years people have criticized those little girl beauty shows. You know that the girls get propped up in makeup and prance around a stage.
Yeah,
and,
that was.
And it's kind of just weird, you know? And then, you know, for years, people have criticized the little girl shorts with writing on the backside.
Yeah.
Like, why would you put writing? Who do you want looking at your 10-year-old daughter's reading that thing on your 10-year-old daughter's backside? Why would you do that? But this, that, all of that, like, is like, I don't know, trying to think of, it's like, watching Bambi now compared to this. And
come on, our dog wants to get on to the bed, but he's getting old.
We should buy one of his ranch.
He wants to be picked up, which is like really. Now he's gonna.
So it's right wing now to be anti-pedophilia, and it's creepy. Somehow it's creepy to not want a film. Think about if you haven't seen the clips, I couldn't watch a whole clip. I could watch part of one. So try to watch at least part of it. And see, so you know what we're talking about. But
unless you're attracted to little girls.
Yeah, unless you're
attracted to little girls. Don't do that.
But who are the girls who are like 11 and younger.
Yeah.
Being taught how to move their hips and dance in a way that is like they're having sex. So what had to go into that? Parents had to say, oh yeah, this is a great idea for my daughter to do this. They're also watching porn in the
movie.
Yeah. And one bares her chest. But they're watching porn. So the parents have to let their little daughters do this. Clearly, they're being paid. There's money in it, so I'm sure it's influencing the decision.
Well, yeah, I mean, they're quote actors,
so. Right? And then the directors have to teach these little girls how to move their hips like they're having sex, and to make all the facial expressions and like their inner erotic situations, and. And the excuse is, oh, we're doing this because we're showing how bad it is for little girls to be exploited.
Yeah, that's what they said.
I read on Twitter. So let's make a 2-hour film torturing animals and then have someone like just staring at the camera, shaking their head the whole time because this is really, really bad. Really bad. They're bad that they're torturing animals here. You don't film pedophilia in order to oppose pedophilia.
Yeah.
You don't have to do that.
No. You don't. I there were two things that
I do. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm gonna interrupt you. I do pray this does actually become like a dividing line, so that yeah, I think it's rare. It should happen that we know who politically and in every other way thinks that opposing pedophilia is creepy. I want to know who those people are.
Yeah.
And I think they should identify themselves.
Well, some of them are being identified on Twitter. That was one of the really interesting things. People are saying, putting up the names and pictures, doxing, I guess. People, well, no, a lot of men have written articles about how great this is. And, yep, I'd like to know
who those men are
and who's tweeting. And, like, please identify yourselves to the local law
enforcement. And if you're a politician who thinks this is a good thing, you should
say that,
a speech about, like, this or something.
So we can know about that. That would be really great. I love the ratio, like the Rotten Tomatoes rating of it was a ratio, because the critics thought it was great, but all the regular votes gave it a garbage can, like hundreds and hundreds of votes for that's garbage. I thought it was, I can't remember what it was. I had something I wanted to say about it.
You know, it's a little bit like, okay, like say you're struggling with some kind of sin. Maybe you love some kind of sin. Let's say you, I don't know, you love to drink a lot of alcohol until you get blasted drunk. But you know it's really bad. So you're going to spend a lot of time, reading about alcohol and writing about alcohol and consuming alcohol to show the effects of alcohol
and how bad it is.
Yeah, I mean, it's a bad example, but
okay, can I tell you what I thought?
It's fooling yourself is what it is. These people thought they were really making a film against pedophilia.
They're self-deluded. I thought it was really, I did watch one whole clip, which deeply shocked me and made me feel sick. It was like, I don't know, maybe 4 minutes. It was really interminably long, so I can't imagine watching the whole thing. But I also watched the whole Cardi B video that came out last month.
Yeah, we talked about this.
And what I thought was really interesting about it is how flat, how dramatically flat and unemotional in both cases. So the clip of these little girls, they're not acting. There's no emotion on the part of the girls. It's so flat. They're just doing the stuff with their bodies almost as automatons, really. There's no facial. Their faces are very flat. The scene is flat. It's not, it's not like Cinderella, which is a very emotional and kind of exhausting emotional kind of thing. Same with the Cardi B. There's no, the women are, you know, it's like they have masks on almost. And I think that's really interesting, because everyone wants, you know, sex is all about feelings. Being in love is about feeling in love. And the whole culture is about feeling. But it's interesting that it's not, you know, this is not about how they feel or what they want or they do, or that women would want or sex or get something out of it emotionally important. It's this flat, it's like watching a Greek play where they're actually wearing masks.
Yeah.
Kind of. It's just really interesting.
It was all, yeah.
And so just visually, aesthetically, I thought this is really boring and terrible. There's no human life here. This isn't about anyone being connected to human people in human community.
And see, that's not the way it's being portrayed. The way it's being portrayed is, like, the article that I read that was defending it, was one of the articles I read, was, this is a coming of age film about little girls figuring out themselves sexually, and you just don't, you know, you're trying to stop the self discovery of little.
No, it's not, because I've read coming of age. I've seen coming of age novels. I've read those or what movies, I've read those novels, and it is, there's a lot of stuff that happens when you come of age that's deep in the soul of the person. And you, it can be really moving to see that on a screen or read it in a book. It can be helpful or it can be unnerving. That's not this.
Yeah.
Like, if you're looking for that, that this movie is not that. You're not going to see that. It's not coming of age. It's exploiting. And it's flat. It's really terrible. Like, interesting and terrible. And horrible.
Yeah. I mean, I just think, I think probably like 10 years ago, everyone would have uniformly.
Oh, that was the other thing. That was the second thing I wanted to. It's interesting to me that Netflix does not have to back down.
Yeah.
Like, that's one thing we've learned in our cancel culture. What the lesson of cancel culture is, if you just don't back down, eventually it'll be fine. It'll go away, which is why J.K. Rowling isn't backing down. And Netflix isn't either. Like, the, 5 years ago, the outcry of this would have made them pull the film because, but no, they know they can ride this out and it's no big deal. It's a big deal, but actually they're getting...
Cancellation culture has actually toughened, probably actually, in the end, going to produce a more...
Course.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because people now learn.
You just hang tight. And you get the publicity, so it's actually good for you because you people find out who you are.
I think it's trending on Netflix.
I mean, everybody's going to see it, so I think that's really interesting too. Netflix knows their core audience also, so I mean, I think it's really, really tragic and sickening. Roger's post was interesting. I think he gives it too much credit for trying to talk about big important topics.
Yeah, I thought like so too.
Islam and France. I don't think that that's
well, but again, I mean, he said he's very right. You could make a film about this very topic and it would be great.
Yeah.
Without the pedophilia and pornography. Yeah, I mean, it could be just as poignant. Right? This wasn't poignant, but it could be poignant.
It could be helpful. Yeah. It could, you know, change people's minds and hearts. So, well, anyway, those are the topics of the day. And
the only good thing that I have to say that's come out movie-wise is the Dune trailer, which is really, really amazing. I can't wait to see it again. The casting is amazing, except for the Kane's guy, who turns out to be a woman in this, but in the book it was a man. But it looks really, really good. I'm super excited. I'm very excited.
I watched it too, and I thought, if I ever have to see this film, I'm not going to be able to cope.
I watched the film in the 80s with the weird blocky armor, and doing that, these kind of force fields that you have when you're fighting one-on-one. As advanced as civilization is, they don't have shooting weapons. They have swords. They've agreed to put up and fight with swords rather than anything else. And so, or pointed weapons, personal weapons. And so they have these armor. They wear this invisible shield they put up. And it looked weird and blocky on the 80s movie. This one looks really cool. It's done amazingly well. And I like the guy they picked as... Why are you looking like this?
Just go on.
I like the guy they picked as Paul Atreides because he looks like he should. In the book, this is how you... I mean, I wasn't picturing this guy in my mind when I was reading about it. But this is how I would have pictured him. This makes sense of the book. He's young because Paul Atreides in Dune is very young, teenager. And he's also... really brilliant. And so this guy has that look to him. The other guy in the 80s was like 30, I think he was 30 years old when they cast him.
You're talking to me about a lot of things and names that I refuse to be interested in.
All right, well, I'm excited.
You're just talking to yourself right now. And maybe one and a half.
You should go watch the Dune trailer. And then you should read the book. Everyone should read the book. If you don't read D'Angelo, stop the race, critical theory, whatever stuff, reading, read Dune and the Bible, but Dune 2. And then go and watch the movie, because it's going to be a great movie. I'm really excited. And they had, aside from the trailer, they also had interviews with the actors before the trailer was out. And a good friend of mine on at church yesterday said I should watch that, so I did. Scott, who's led a thing for us, a book group through Dune. This is what I did during COVID.
I know.
I think I'm a nerd, don't you?
I mean, that word doesn't even begin to...
I hadn't read the book before this book group, and we read it together, and he read us, so it was really good. But Scott told me about this, the interviews with the actors, and I watched it yesterday while you were trying to talk to me. And it was really cool, because they had more footage. So, and then it was in the trailer, so you should watch that too.
I'm not going to watch that. I watched the trailer, and I was...
I think you'd like Dune.
No, I don't think I would like... I feel like you don't know me at all if you'd say I think I'd like Dune.
You like Star Wars.
Okay, if you're going to... I don't love Star Wars, though. I'm not interested in Star Wars. I go as a point of nostalgia whenever a new Star Wars movie comes out, because I like Princess Leia. What do you mean I like Star Wars? Well, yeah, because I like to go to a movie once a year. It makes me feel close to my family. I don't like Star Wars. Since you just did that, I'm just going to go tell you that I'm still reading Green Thoughts by Eleanor Perrigny, a writer in the garden. And I just got through the chapter on magic, which was brilliant, and the chapter on longevity. So if you're interested in knowing how long gardeners live, how long did famous gardeners live, in the chapter on longevity, she says at length how long people lived. And I thought that is at least as interesting as what you just said, all the things that you just said. So if you don't want to watch Dune, you can read this brilliant and beautiful book that I'm still reading. So I'm reading it so slowly because I'm afraid it's going to end and I'm going to be really, really, really sad. I might have to start back over at the beginning. So I just wanted to put that in there. Equal time. And so I will probably be back next week. Thanks for listening.